global journalist on KBIA. This is the program that says mid-Missourians, indeed many Americans, are interested in international news. I'm Stuart Lurie of the Missouri School of Journalism, coming to you again from London. As deployment of troops to the Persian Gulf area continues, there has been intense attention paid to the United States' relations with the larger nations of Europe, particularly Germany and France, which oppose the war, and Great Britain, which supports it and will help fight it. There has also been a lot of discussion about relations between the United States and the countries neighboring Iraq. But there has not been much said about relations between the United States and other important countries, and that's what we want to talk about today. How is the buildup to war viewed in Australia, in East Asia, in the smaller countries of Europe, particularly the Netherlands, and in Latin America? To talk about that today, we have Ben English, Chief Security Reporter of the Daily Telegraph in Sydney, Australia, Wendy Bronker, Economics Editor of Radio Netherlands in Utrecht, the Netherlands, Eric Du, Chief of the Domestic News Copy Editing Desk for the Japan Times in Tokyo, and Andres Hizara, a freelance journalist in Caracas, Venezuela. Let's start with Ben English. Ben, Australia is very much on the side of the United States and very supportive of George Bush. Is there much opposition to that in your country?
Well, there certainly is. You could take a poll in Australia today and it probably wouldn't be much different. The outcome probably wouldn't be much different than perhaps in the Netherlands. I'm not so sure about Venezuela, but I could tell you that it'd be fairly similar to an outcome of a poll in the Netherlands or England as to whether there's support for at least unilateral action to be taken against Saddam. I think if you took a poll, it'd probably be about at the moment 60% opposition to a military strike against Saddam without UN approval. And then that would be reversed once UN approval was gained. So, in other words, 60% approval if there was the tick of approval from the UN.
Yeah, but on the other hand, the government is going to send Australian troops to help fight the war. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. If anything, Australia would have to be regarded as the US's staunchest ally in this. They've actually gone a little bit further than Tony Blair and said that the Australian ambassador this week has said that time has completely run out for Saddam, that the time for negotiation has ended, that there's really no more time to consider whether he is genuine in considering the world's request for him to disarm. So Australia is pretty gung-ho about it. They've already committed 2,000 troops. It's more of a qualitative than quantitative commitment. But nevertheless, it's not insignificant for a country of the size of Australia. And, the big controversy here is that the opposition groups and certainly a lot of the marches that have taken place, there's 500,000 people who marched against the war last week, and the message has been how and why has John Howard, the Australian Prime Minister, committed so many troops when really the Australian public is not behind him?
Yeah. We'll come back to Australia in just a bit, but let's talk a little bit about Japan. Eric Du, we don't read very much about what is going on in Japan or what the attitudes are of the Japanese people and the Japanese government.
Well, officially, the government is somewhat akin to Australia and Great Britain in that probably the only four countries that are conspicuously supportive of this effort in the Middle East are those four, including Japan. Like Australia, Japan also had, and I guess most other countries had, large rallies last weekend, and Japan had a fairly large turnout, although I don't think nearly representative of the population that 500,000 people would be in Australia. I think, you know, and basically Japan has always had, since World War II, it's had an aversion to war, and it's basically had that, you know, made into law. And, you know, I think people, by and large, are opposed to the war just like they are in any other country. But there's a little bit of a... This attitude is a little bit tempered of late because of the nuclear brinkmanship going on with North Korea and the reality that this could become a very, very dangerous situation real fast, and the damages that could occur from something getting out of hand would happen in a day's time. You would totally transform this whole area into a holocaust. And I think that, you know, there's a certain amount of, you know, the anti-American base rhetoric is kind of disappeared.
Mm-hmm. Right. If I can ask Wendy Bronker in the Netherlands, the situation there is complicated. Your country is sort of caught in the middle.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways. How is that playing out?
Well, I think the Dutch are somewhat embarrassed about the situation because of the rift between the NATO members. Especially the politicians are very unhappy about it. But then, again, the local people, the people, the inhabitants, they have a different feeling about the whole situation. They want clarity, but they don't want the clarity that the politicians want, like one face for NATO. They want a more clarity about what is the outcome of this war if it happens. I mean, people worry about it that because it's so unclear what could be the result of it, they worry about it. And I think in that case, they look to our neighboring country, Belgium, because it's a small country like Holland. And they had quite a strong stance when the NATO members had this fight about whether to support Turkey with military aid. They had quite a strong stance against it. And the Dutch, they just sat back a bit, and they were just being embarrassed about the whole situation. But they didn't do much about it.
But Wendy, how does the Dutch government come down on this situation? Are they being supportive?
I think the government is more pro-Bush, more pro-the U.S., and especially because we have currently social democrats and Christian democrats talking about a new coalition. The Christian democrats are very much pro-power, pro-Bush, pro-America. So they try to solve it their way, and I think they try to bridge what has gone wrong between NATO countries. And they even before NATO decided that they were going to support Turkey, the Dutch government decided that they were going to send patriots to Turkey. So they were behaving like they were more like saints in a way. They were a bit too fast, in my sense.
Mm-hmm. And if I can ask Andre Cesara in Caracas, Venezuela, your country has its own very serious problems, problems that are, in fact, overwhelming, and problems that are of great concern elsewhere around the world, including the United States. What is being said there about the buildup of war to Iraq?
Well, as you just said, we are pretty much overwhelmed by the internal debate, political debate that's going on right now. We went through a national strike that lasted 60 days, and that left us pretty tired in terms of political fighting. Nevertheless, we saw between 5,000 and 8,000 people march last Saturday during the marches against the Iraq war that happened throughout the world. I say the march was minimal compared to the big marches that we have seen from both sides happening during this confrontation that we've been going through for the last month, almost a year so far. So I would say in Venezuela, the war against Iraq, or the possibility that the United States will attack Iraq, is at this moment on a second level. We are now too much concentrated on our own political problems, which are big enough.
Mm-hmm. If I can go back to Ben English in Australia. Ben, I understand that Australian Army members were told not to wear their uniforms when they leave their bases because there is so much criticism there. Is that so?
There have been reports of that. There's been isolated reports in northern Australia, for example, a couple of days ago, that a number of soldiers were abused at a shopping centre. They were called warmongers. It's not like a widespread thing, though. It's not like Vietnam yet.
Right.
That way.
Did this actually happen in Vietnam or during the Vietnam War?
It was a huge thing in Vietnam when many of them were coming back through the airport. They had things thrown at them, and they were denigrated as essentially as symbols of everything that was wrong about Vietnam. It was sort of a bit of a stain on our history, if you like. Or at least on the peace movement. In hindsight, that. They blamed the soldiers themselves, but the armies, and it had a huge effect on the morale of the defence force as well. So, the army is very, very wary of that happening again.
Okay, we have to take a break now. This is Global Journalist on KBIA. I'm Stuart Lurie. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Global Journalist. You may listen to this program again, ask questions, or make comments by going to www.globaljournalist.org or in Mid-Missouri by calling us at 573-882-9641. I'd like to bring up the question of oil. Andre Cesara, Venezuela's oil exports are way down because of the conflict that's going on in your country between the president, Hugo Chavez, and a lot of the people in your country who are out of sympathy with him. As a result of that, there is a story here in London today in one of the British newspapers saying that the United States' imports of oil from Iraq, mind you, have gone way up. What is the situation in Venezuela? Are the oil exports going to be resumed again anytime soon in previous numbers?
Well, that's really hard to tell, especially when you lack of independent confirmation of how much oil is being produced at this moment. If we follow what the government is saying, we should be nearing the 2 million barrels a day. We have an OPEC quota of 3 million barrels, so that put us down still for another million barrels that we have not been able to put into the market because of the oil strike. The government has been able to bring up the oil production up to 2 million barrels, so there's really no reason to think why they shouldn't be able to reach their 3 million barrel per day quota. When will that be reached? That still is unknown. The government is claiming a huge sabotage that happened after these people who were on strike walked out of the refineries and other production sites for the oil industry. And we, in fact, have been able to confirm pipelines that have been damaged, tanks that have been left with asphalt to dry, which has collapsed much of the production system, and other acts of sabotage. So as long as the government is able to come over those obstacles to bring up production, Venezuela will be back to its normal OPEC quota.
Mm-hmm. Wendy Bronker, is this story about the American purchases of oil from Iraq reported at all in Netherlands? And if so, how is it viewed? Is it viewed with any sense of cynicism or wonderment?
Well, to be honest, I haven't read anything about it, although I've looked through most of the papers. So, no, not much is written about it.
Uh-huh. And, Eric, do in Japan, one has the feeling that one of the reasons Japan is so interested in the Middle Eastern situation is because so much of its oil comes from that part of the world.
Yes, that's right. And at this point, actually today, the government issued an announcement that it would not only free up its stocks in the event that war erupted and there was a perceived shortage, but would also initiate a bartering of oil stocks among the private sector to make sure there was still plenty of oil and at an affordable price. That's one of the worries, I guess, here is not only the availability but the price. And with the yen value fluctuating almost on a daily basis, at this point now being, well, a little bit stronger than it was a few months back, oil is a strong motive to sort of be very interested in this whole issue.
Mm-hmm. Ben English, tell us a little bit, if you would, about why Australia is, as you put it, so gung-ho on this issue. Is it just that it wants to be supportive of the United States and the United Kingdom, or are there other issues involved here?
There's a few issues involved. John Howard and the coalition government are conservative. It's a conservative government, so traditionally it has been a big supporter of the United States policies per se, and particularly of the Republican Party and George W. Bush. They're close friends. George W. Bush and John Howard, they get on very well. That's not the main factor. The main factor would be September 11 perhaps woke Australians up to the concept of terrorism in the West. And the attack on Bali on October 12 certainly jolted us more than ever. And I think there was a sense in Australia that that we're next and that something ought to be done. And there's a certain sense that there's a nexus in Australia, at least within this government, that if we don't stand up to Saddam or people like Saddam, then terrorists will be encouraged. And so therefore we have to take a strong stand. The other thing is that Australia has a long history of strong support for the US. Going back beyond Vietnam, there's a strong sense in this country that the US saved Australia in World War II and that, in a sense, we still owe them.
Mm-hmm. The investigations of the Bali bombings have shown a link with Al-Qaeda, haven't they? Have they shown any link at all that would implicate Saddam Hussein?
No. There's no link that's been established, and the views that I just shared with you aren't necessarily those of Australia as a whole, but certainly of the Australian government.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, I think that you'd find that a majority of Australians would accept that while there might not be a direct link between Saddam and Al-Qaeda, they wouldn't find it a stretch to believe that he'd be happy to horse trade with terrorists.
Yeah. There are some indications that the march toward war is slowing down a little bit. The Bush administration seems to be softening its bombast. It is accepting the idea of some delay. And even Tony Blair here in London is now talking about not doing anything until mid-March. Does that give any of you the feeling that war still might be avoided? Wendy, do you want to take that?
Well, I don't think it will be avoided, though, because over the past few weeks it has become so clear that the U.S. wants this war to start someday pretty soon. So I think the only problem is that, although I don't want this war, I think the problem now is that it takes so long before something started. That has become a problem for NATO, for instance, the past few weeks, because it takes so long. Different participants, they notice that the situation is becoming even more complicated. Everybody has got a saying in this, and so it's become, by the time it's running out, I think it's become more complicated over the past few weeks. Everybody has a word in it, and so it while it drags on, it's becoming even more difficult. But I think now that the two camps you had, the US and Europe, there was a big gap between them. The gap is becoming smaller, and you can also see this back in the NATO now. The gap between NATO is becoming smaller as well. So as soon as the gap becomes smaller between one or two parties, it has an effect on other participants as well.
Mm-hmm. And Andre Cesara, how do you see it?
Excuse me, can you repeat the question?
The question is whether or not the drive toward war is slowing, and whether that means that there is some possibility that war can be avoided.
Well, I see it that way, especially after the big marches all over the world last Saturday. I mean, it's hard to push a war when you have so much popular sentiment against it. I also feel that the arguments that the U.S. government is posing to the war, they're weakening, and they don't have the support of the United Nations as a whole. So it seems to me that on the short term, there won't be an attack. But, of course, we would still have to wait for the further developments during the next weeks.
Mm-hmm. Eric Du, what about in Japan? How is it viewed?
Well, I think it's I think still, you know, people are wary that it's going to start. Although, like my other colleagues have mentioned, there does seem to be some sentiment wearing away at it. And today, especially with the UN coming out and basically rattling off dire casualty statistics, should a war erupt. But I think basically, you know, in Japan, the news media is pretty much figuring that it's a done deal unless, you know, Saddam was to trot out all the weapons that America and Britain and Australia suspect he has. I mean, short of that, if a war does erupt, of course, you know, Saddam's rhetoric reported in our paper and other papers is that the first, you know, the Americans who land on Iraq's soil will be, you know, dealt with in the most horrendous manner, suggesting that he has the weapons that he claims he doesn't. And so I think, you know, a lot of people in Japan pretty much surmise that he is hiding something and that this can't just be two sides. You know, the army just can't walk back to America and forget that this ever happened.
Yeah. Ben English, I take it that John Howard has not softened his rhetoric to the same extent that Tony Blair has.
No, he hasn't. And I think just to pick up on the previous speakers, I think there's a sense here that unless that essentially everything's coming to a head in the next sort of 10 days and that we're going to see a resolution from the UN, the words of which, you know, obviously still being worked out, there'll be a deadline set, and that will be game, set, and match. That that the deadline is what might be the 11th hour get out for Saddam. I think that's the sense in Australia, is that we're heading towards the point where there's no more grey areas. It's either Saddam comes forward and comes clean on the weapons, or else. And if he doesn't, then there's the inevitability of war.
Hmm. Wendy, is the Netherlands going to provide any military support through NATO or elsewise to this effort?
Well, even before the NATO decided what they were going to do, the Netherlands decided they were going to send Patriots to Turkey. So they're doing something already. And I think if it comes to a war, I think the Netherlands will support the thing as well. They will even maybe send troops as well.
Did it do that in the first Gulf War?
Pardon?
I say, did the Netherlands do that? Did it give military support in the first Gulf War?
Yes, yes, they did, but I don't know how much exactly, because I haven't looked back for that exactly. But they did support it, but I don't know exactly how much.
Mm-hmm. Ben English, if I can come back to you, have any troops left Australia yet for deployment in the Middle East?
Yes, they have. Australia already had a couple of frigates in the Gulf who were helping out with the enforcing of the sanctions. But the main deployment was about 3 weeks ago when the Canimbla left with about 600 troops on board, including SAS troops. We have just been witnessing a huge controversy here about soldiers refusing their anthrax injections for... excuse me, I'm trying to just get my train of thought here. They were taking anthrax. I've lost the word for it.
But at any rate, the troops have been employed, or deployed, I should say. Excuse me. And presumably they are somewhere in the Middle East, in Saudi Arabia or Kuwait or elsewhere, and ready to go.
Our SAS troops, they're essentially the elite commandos. They're a shadowy group of elite troops. There have been reports that they're already some of them are already inside Iraq. They helped out with the operations in Afghanistan. So they're already deployed.
Uh-huh. And do you still have troops in Afghanistan, or are they all out now?
We don't have any more in Afghanistan at the moment. They've been withdrawn.
Right. Okay. I'm sorry to say that we are out of time. Our guests today have been Andre Cesara, a freelance journalist in Caracas, Venezuela, Eric Du of the Japan Times in Tokyo, Wendy Bronker of Radio Netherlands in Utrecht, Holland, and Ben English of the Daily Telegraph in Sydney, Australia. Our director is Pat Akers, and our producer is Sarah Andrea Fajardo. For all, I'm Stuart Lurie, global journalist. We'll be back next week.